It's a good ball played in for Tony Morley. Oh, he missed it!
Good evening, Aston Villa fans, and welcome to the Villa Forever podcast. I am your host, Chad Williams. Please subscribe, and you can follow me on Spotify, Apple, and Amazon Music. Help me to the road to 2K. This evening, I'm joined by Aston Villa fan, Lily Hen, and we have special guest Stephen Dunbar on the show, who's for the Newcastle 360 podcast. This is the match preview after Aston Villa's proud performance against PSG. Aston Villa turned their attention to Premier League action with the visitors, Newcastle United, and this is an important game. It's probably the biggest Premier League game of the season for Aston Villa. Both teams are in good form and are battling for Champions League qualification at the end of the season. The Champions League race is hotting up. Please tell you both for the show. How are we tonight?
Hi, Chad.
Hi, Chad.
Well, Stephen, pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you very much. I don't know if I'd cast myself as a special guest, but I'll take it.
Yeah, Steve, I bet you must be very happy as a Newcastle fan.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really understating it to say that this is the best season most of us have ever seen. We look like we're pretty much on course for Champions League qualification, and then, you know, my dad was 6 months old when we last won a domestic trophy. So, you know, to beat four of the Premier League's top five on the route to our first domestic trophy in 70 years was, you know, pretty special. And then getting to relive it again in the parade and celebrations in the city a couple of weeks ago was fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
I was at the Taran Moor. I didn't go through the whole parade, but I was at the final destination on the end. I think the Sky Sports, they reported numbers, I think that came from the council and the police. I think there was about 300,000 people reported at the event. I think the population of Newcastle is about 300,000. So I think pretty much everyone was there who could make it.
I mean, it's an incredible experience. You just think with Villa, like, hopefully we can take a leaf out of Newcastle's book. Because if you can win it, you know, who's to say that Aston Villa can win the FA Cup?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially considering, I think this season as well has shown that, I think in the era of stronger financial restrictions, I think teams that have learned to box smart and you know, bring in coaches who are just really good at improving players and getting more out of players, teams on the sum of their parts, can compete with anybody. I mean, you know, you look at how expensively assembled Man United and Chelsea are, and they've both, you know, Man United have been awful and Chelsea have floundered. Yeah. And, you know, they can't just buy their way out of trouble now. And you look at the teams around the European places, all of whom are well within reach of having a European campaign next year. I mean, Forest have been great.
You're currently sit third in the Premier League table.
Yeah.
I mean, so you're putting pressure on, like, you know, Forest. They'll start to feel the pressure now, Nottingham Forest.
I think Forest as well, especially because they've lost Chris Wood and they've lost a couple games and they've played poorly for the win that they had before that as well.
Yeah, and also again, but I want to speak about Eddie Howe as well. But I think he deserves more credit for what he's done, because he's a bit similar to, you know, Unai Emery.
Mm-hmm.
With Eddie Howe, it's a similar journey with him.
Yeah,
well, he's transformed the football club.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a couple of things that they have in common. They sort of both become the sort of the heartbeat of the Cubs. I think it's notable that Unai Emery was our first choice when we moved on from Steve Bruce post takeover, and then we did it a bit too publicly. Unai Emery backed out of that running for that, and then we moved on to Eddie Howe. Can't complain about that because, you know, it's worked out perfectly for us. But you know, I've been a big fan of Unai Emery's since his days in Sevilla. He would have succeeded more at Arsenal if they'd bought into what he wanted. Because you look at Villa now, you know, they bought into what he wanted to do, his project, and it's paying dividends. You know, Villa have been a tremendous side since he's been there, and they both sort of like, I think there's a lot of parallels drawn with Eddie Howe and Diego Simeone because he went over and studied some training methods that he used. But all three of them as managers get the clubs pulling in the same direction. They're all unifying forces, and I think that's definitely something that Howe and Emery have in common.
You got to put a good plan and structure in place. I mean, to think though, you got Champions League football, you've won the Carabao Cup, and then you got a chance to be in the Champions League again for next season.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, we will be there. Hopefully, as well. Again,
I definitely think there's a good shot at that, yeah.
Yeah, because this thing, if it goes down to fifth place,
I'd like to ask you about Callum Wilson, Del Ding Dong. He's not just about football, but he's I do like him.
we like our number nines up here, yeah. So we love Callum Wilson. He was with us obviously before the takeover happened. And you know, he's been a really good player for us. He's definitely coming to the end of his, he's definitely at the end of his peak now. His physical powers are sort of waning a bit. He doesn't have the same quickness, but he's street smart in a way as a footballer. He's good at riling people up, and he's good at sort of toeing the line, pushing the envelope with referees and ticking off defenders. He's still got lots to offer. It's just with the way we play now, and given the form of Alexander Isak ahead of him, he's probably not going to be here with us come the start of next season.
I was going to ask, do you think you'll sell him in the summer?
Well, I think we will. I think there'll be teams lower down in the Premier League who'll come in for him. You look at the likes, so you know, there'll be teams who are willing to let him sit up the other end of the pitch and then just hoof the ball to him. And you know, there'll be teams like, you know, they look at the likes of like, maybe not West Ham. I mean, maybe West Ham, because he gets on well with Mikel Antonio. But you look at like Everton, people who might need extra firepower and who'd be maybe willing to spend a bit more than he's maybe worth now to get him.
It's a bit like Dan going to West Ham, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I was gutted when he went.
Also, this season, Steve, you've been lucky that you haven't got as many injuries. You kept some more than a fit squad. As well, you're looking that way as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, last season we had the worst injury record in the league, comfortably the worst, and that wasn't even adding in Sandro Tonali's 10-month ban. I think when they measure it by how many days of football are missed cumulatively, and I think we were a few hundred days ahead of Man United in second. I think the thing that's really helped is, I mean, we had a lot of change behind the scenes at the start of the season. I mean, a couple of our board members, Amanda Staveley, the most notable of them, left, and we also lost Dan Ashworth to Man United. In response to that, we brought in Paul Mitchell as director of football. He brought in a guy called James Bunce, who is the performance director, and he worked with him at Monaco, and his whole job is align with the coaching staff and set up a plan to maximize the durability of the squad. And we've gone from loads and loads of injuries last season to having a really durable team now. We look fitter and stronger than we ever have this season.
Quality in the squad?
Yeah, we've got a lot of quality in the starting 11. Depth is maybe our biggest weakness at the moment.
That's the thing. We still need a bit more strength in depth, I would say. Well, the bench is getting stronger, but I think it just takes a bit more time.
A smarter recruitment as well, being able to sell a project with a limited role to players who might want a bigger part to play. I do think Villa have got a better squad overall than us in terms of depth. You know, we can't bring someone. You know, Daniel Malin wasn't even in the squad for Europe. Obviously, he wasn't registered for the Champions League. You know, we can't bring on. We've got Anthony Gordon on the left hand side, but you know, you guys can play John McGinn and Morgan Rogers on the left, and then you have Daniel Malin as well.
We've got more options.
Yeah.
Well, you've got there, actually. We've got. I looked at our bench. We've got a very strong bench. The likes of Watkins, you know, Marco Asensio.
Matson.
You got Matson on there, yeah, that's a real true quality.
Yeah.
I was going to talk about the PSG game. So ask you, Lily, what are your thoughts on the PSG game?
Well, we got to the quarterfinal, didn't we? So that's a victory itself. And I think the first half, I was thinking, this is it. But second half, what happened? Absolutely fantastic how we came back. Tielemans coming in back with that goal. And then Super John McGinn.
Well, what a goal. I mean, that was an incredible goal. That was.
He's like a little terrier, isn't he? Just rushing, you know, running across the pitch. He owned that and he wanted it, didn't he? And it showed, to be fair. And I just think it was amazing. I think we should have made some changes beforehand. That we did. I think Maxson should have come on a bit earlier because obviously we nearly scored that goal in the 90th minute, and that was such a that was quite gutting that, you know, it didn't go in. But yeah, I thought Villa were absolutely outstanding. Really,
I think Watkins. I think Watkins should have started.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Do you guys think that? There was, I do think it was maybe a bit justified starting Rashford over Watkins, because you look at Rashford, I mean, he obviously got his assist. He created two more chances along with the assist. He was, I think Rashford was probably your best player on the night.
Yeah, that assist was really good. John McGinn.
And also, you know, John McGinn, he's a true leader on that pitch.
He is.
And he took the game by the scruff of its neck.
He did. He deserves to be captain, really. He's got the personality. He's got the, you know, he's got a really good team spirit, hasn't he? And I just think he's amazing. He's the heart of the Villa team, I think. Him and Mings.
He's one of those captains that sort of lead by example, and that's what you need, a captain like that in your team.
You do, definitely.
You'll never find a harder working player than a Scot, a fellow countryman of mine.
Yeah.
when I went out of Villa Park, I was very proud.
Because you could feel the energy through the telly, to be honest with you, from the players, from the crowd. You could just feel the atmosphere in your own living room. What it was like down there, I'll bet it was electrifying.
And I saw as well, but we've been unbeaten in the Champions League at Villa Park.
That's
a great achievement in itself.
It absolutely is. For the Villa fans, the memories that will make amazing.
The Villa Park, it's like a Champions League, it's a real fortress.
I felt a bit sorry for Prince William because he was born, wasn't he, last time he won it? He was born the same year. Mm-hmm. And for him to take his son there. And we did win the game, didn't we? So, you know, it wasn't like we did lose. I thought it would have been amazing for his son to experience, to, you know, get through.
I think it's against PSG. There's no shame going out to a team like that.
They're one of the best teams.
Well, the elite top team. There's no shame about that at all.
Absolutely. I mean,
if you consider that of the four teams left in the Champions League, I mean, what, Simone Inzaghi, Inter's been to a Champions League final, but the other two, outside of Arsenal, I mean, you know, Luis Enrique at PSG and Hansi Flick at Barca have both won trebles. These are, you know, the guys you're going up against are guys who have real pedigree in the Champions League. So there's absolutely, especially, you know, you look at PSG, a team full of young, quite young players who are really, who work really hard. They're actually, they themselves are really impressive. So I think the tie overall, from a neutral perspective, was really impressive. It was a really fun two games of football to watch, even though the English side went out. But yeah, there's no shame at all in losing PSG. I think PSG and Barcelona will probably be in the final, I think, for my money.
Yeah.
We thought like Lions. I think as well. I know, even the atmosphere there, I really enjoyed the atmosphere. And actually, you know, even Luis Enrique, the PSG manager, he said that they, you know, that Villa did scare them. The guys were scared.
He was quite complimentary, wasn't he, about our team, which I thought was quite nice.
It was. I mean, I think with their goalkeeper, Donnarumma, it was some great saves.
Yeah.
It wasn't for him, I think we would have won that game.
Yeah.
On the Champions League as well, as a Villa fan, I made some unforgettable memories, which I'll always remember forever.
Yeah.
You'll be able to make more next season as well, considering you look like you've got a very good shot, especially with Chelsea floundering. You'll probably be in the Champions League again next season anyway.
You will need to do that. If you can win the FA Cup, I think that will top it off for me.
I think we deserve to. I think we deserve to win the FA Cup. Yeah. We deserve to take some silver home this season, yeah. I think. Especially with the season we've had, I think we've been fantastic. I think we deserve something.
As long as it's not City that win it, I personally, from a third-party perspective, as long as it's one of Forest, Palace or Villa that win it, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
As long as it's someone new. Because us winning the Carabao Cup and then, you know... Mm-hmm. Forest have won something before. You guys have won. Ideally, if I had to pick, I'd pick Palace because they've never won a trophy. I think that would be a great story. But as long as it's not City, like I say.
We go back to the PSG game. It's sort of shy that Jaime conceded those two goals. He sort of set the tone for the game. There's actually two fullbacks scored, Hakimi and Mendes.
I think with those two goals and conceding at the beginning, though, I think it really...
We'll see this. I think he made a mess of the first one.
Yeah.
He should have claimed it.
I think it was a little unlucky to concede that as well, though. You've seen plenty of goals or non-goals like that where it comes off the keeper and just bounces a bit of a further angle.
He parried it.
Yeah, he got contact. I think the second one, though, I think that's just a really good goal. Particularly from Mensch, I think it was really good.
From Villa point of view, I mean, the semi-final was a step too far for Villa. At the moment, I would say it's a step too far.
Given the quality of the teams that are in the semi-final as well, other than Arsenal, because I don't think they're that good, but... The other teams in the semi-final stage, I think they're all so good that not reaching that stage is not a slight in by any means.
Yeah. So Steve, I was talking about Saturday. For both teams, this is a really important game. So what do you expect?
It's going to be a difficult one. I don't know. I think it's going to be decided on what version of Villa turns up. I think, much like our form post-cup final win, a lot of people quite rightly, I think, or quite fairly, expected that we could have just eased off because we had won the trophy and, you know, we guaranteed some form of Europe. I think there would be a lot of people who might think that because of just how much Villa put into that second leg against PSG, that it wouldn't be too surprising if they were a bit drained. But I think, personally, that Villa Park's probably going to be bouncing because they're going to, I think the Villa faithful are probably going to want to show their appreciation for the team. I think they've got plenty of rotation that they can call upon. I mean, I think that there's more depth. It's going to be a tough game. We're in really good form. Some people, I'm not going to tout Jason Cundy as like this oracle of football, but you know, And when people who normally don't give us credit have started giving us credit, we've got, I think, the best midfield in the country at the moment. I think we're probably on form, arguably the best team in the country right now. So yeah, it's gonna, if assuming Villa turn up for it, I think it's gonna be a really good game.
Well, for a Villa point of view, I think for Villa, this is probably the biggest guy in the season for Villa in terms of the Champions League race.
I think so too.
This was, yeah, this was the one that after our cup final, we, I think a number of us in our fan base and at NUFC 360, we all pointed at this game because Arsenal, you know, we can handle Arsenal. We've beaten Arsenal three times this season, manhandled them. And we'll probably do it for a fourth time when we go to the Emirates. Mm-hmm. But this was the game that we all pointed at and went, this is the one we're nervous about because, you know, we have a better record than not against Villa. In the last 10, we've won 5, gone 2, lost 3. And a couple of those losses are a good way back now. The last time we lost was 2 seasons ago away at Villa Park when we lost 3-0 or 3-1. We've recent last couple of games, we've scored a few goals against you. So, you know, it'll be interesting.
I've got to watch what I say because my HR manager, hello Brian, he's a mad Newcastle fan.
Oh, good man.
Yes, whatever I say is going to reflect me going back into the office. So I think it's going to be a very tough game on Saturday.
Yeah, it could be.
But as you say, if Villa turn up and perform like they did on the second half of the match at PSG, I think it's something to be worried about for Newcastle.
Well, we think we need to play like that for the rest of the season, Villa.
And we should be doing that. We have got a really strong bench, as you said. So I think, I don't know how, but Emery's going to play this Saturday, to be honest with you. Who's he going to put on?
Well, I think this time, I think it might make a few rotations. I think at Watkins, I think Watkins will lead the line, I think, this time.
Yeah, possibly. Hope they bring
I like as well. I'm glad that Onana's back. The last game, he was excellent.
Oh, he's brilliant.
He's a real powerhouse.
Yeah, he is.
I don't think Onana, he gives us a lot of strength in that midfield.
It's got a lot of character as well.
I think it's going to be interesting for me to see how Emery sets up to combat our midfield. I think, especially at the moment, I think our midfield can go toe-to-toe with anybody. That combo of Jolinton, Bruno Guimaraes, and Sandro Tonali, who I think Sandro Tonali might be the best midfielder in the country at the moment. I mean, I can say that about a lot of our players because we're playing so well, but our midfield is really our strength right now. And considering you guys tend to play with sort of two deeper line midfielders and then someone usually a 10 ahead of them, it'll be interesting to see how Emery sets it up. I thought before I saw your lineup against PSG, I thought that it would have been primed for McGinn to play, but then because he played against PSG, I don't know if he might rotate him, but I can fully see Emery maybe trying to get a numerical advantage in the middle by, you know, Onana, Boubacar Kamara, Tielemans, and McGinn. McGinn can play central. I think that's going to be where the battle's won or lost for either team.
I think he'd be key in that battle, Onana. Because what Mark Huggins said in the comments, it's going to be a physical game.
Yeah.
Both teams are big. Both teams are strong. I think, it's going to be a slugfest, as it were.
I watched your game tonight against Manchester United. And I was quite impressed with Jacob Murphy.
I like him.
Yeah. He's been fantastic this season. This is his first, this is the most minutes he's played in a season at Newcastle. And it's been by far his best season. Since Almiron left in January as well, he's been brilliant. I think
he's
a big bloke, isn't he?
6'7", we call him Big Dan Byrne.
Oh, right, okay.
And he's a sound lad as well. He's a local lad. He's from up around here. He's a Boyhood fan, and you know, there's a bit going around on social media of him stopping and helping push a car on the motorway the other on the road the other day. He's a sound lad. We love him.
And also, I think, you know, going back to you said about the Newcastle guy, I think the atmosphere is going to feel very similar to that guy. You know, the guy, was it in 2023? Yeah, we beat you, I think it was 3-0.
Yeah.
Jacob Ramsey scored. And I think that atmosphere is going to feel very similar.
Mm.
Because the guy, it's got something riding on it.
It would be interesting to, one thing I'm interested to see is there was a lot of pressure put on our game yesterday against Palace before we won that one 5-0. That we had, because that was our game in hand. We had that's what sent us up to third. Yeah. And there was a lot put on that game for us because we thought, well, if we don't win, then that means losing to you guys on Saturday would send you guys above us. But even if we lose to you now, that's still a 2-point gap.
You had a game in hand. You beat Crystal Palace.
Yeah, that's the game. Yeah, I was there yesterday for that. That was
5-0, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a great game. You mentioned Jacob Murphy. He scored a wonder goal from a really tight angle. And, you know, we've scored 9 goals in our last 2 games, and Alexander Isak's only scored 1 of them. So we're playing really well right now.
Yeah,
Harvey Barnes is scoring for fun at the moment, which is great.
I mean, your goal difference is very good.
Yeah, the last couple of games has helped. You know, we going up against Palace, who are a good side most of the time. They've won a bunch of games recently, so they are still a good team. And then, you know, Minnows, who shouldn't even be in the league, like Man United, you know, they're a bit of an easier game to go up against.
Yeah.
I agree.
Best striker since Alan Shearer,
isn't he? Oh, for us, absolutely, yeah. He's the best. Yeah, he's the best all round forward we've had, maybe at least in my lifetime. Alan Shearer for us wasn't as good as Isak as an all round player. Alan Shearer at Blackburn was a better player, but yeah, Isak's definitely the best striker we've had since Shearer. You know, a lot of the players, it's also maybe an indictment on how we've been quality-wise, that you can look at most of our players and you can say, well, Tonali and Bruno are maybe two of the best midfielders we've ever had, ever, even going back to when we last won a trophy in the 60s. And Kieran Trippier is maybe the best right-back we've ever had, certainly in the Premier League. You know, there's a lot of that pitch. Yeah. Well, less so recently. He's got this tendency to sort of float them in, and that's sort of a bit of a frustration, but yeah, he's still really good, yeah.
If you could have one of our players, which one would it be? Someone should just ask that question.
Ooh.
Good question.
I'd probably go for Morgan Rogers, personally.
You're not having him, but...
because... I think our midfield is grand as it is. I think there's no one. Amadou Onana's good. I don't think he is better than any of our starting three. I think our biggest, as good as he's been this season, Jacob Murphy's 30. He's probably not going to have as good a season as this again, unless I'm surprised, and I'm happy to be wrong there. I think Morgan Rogers is really young. He looks really, really good, and we need another right winger. So he can play on the right-hand side. He's bloody brilliant. I'll take Morgan Rogers. The only other one I would maybe have considered would have been, if he was a couple years younger, I would have taken Ollie Watkins maybe, because we need someone to compete with Isak who isn't named Callum Wilson. Other than that, maybe Emi Martinez, because we need a better keeper. That's maybe another one.
But
I'd...
no, he's the world's number one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah,
you've got Nick Pope, he's one of the England goalkeepers.
Yeah, but he is a total bomb scare when he has the ball at his feet. So he's still really good, but this season he's dropped off a bit recently.
My cousin used to play for Newcastle. Andy O'Brien.
Yeah.
I've never met him, but I know that
Subject of a couple of anti-Sunderland fan songs up here.
Yeah,
Well, I think of this game as well. Look at the second ball, but also going to be put, you know, in the air with the second balls and jewels. Because I think Dan Byrne, I think it's going to be like a real, we're going to have to be up for it. That's where the game could be won as well.
I agree. I think that's one of the things that, one of the reasons why we won our last two games by big scorelines was our press recently has been on point. We've physically, this is where a lot of the work, you know, like I mentioned, our performance director, James Bunce, improving our fitness, and Eddie Howe is such an intense coach to have, even though at the moment he's in hospital with pneumonia.
Best wishes to him.
Best wishes.
Yeah, he's probably not going to be back in the dugout this season, I don't think. It's probably just going to be Jason Tindall for the rest of the season. But we've been such an intense team under him. We're really fit, so our press is working really well that late on in the season for us. And you, like you say about second balls, you know, Dan Byrne is great at winning the aerial duels. And then one of the reasons why we've been so good is because that midfield three have been fantastic at mopping up, particularly Tonali. Tonali's great at mopping up in and around midfield. And Tino Livramento playing at left back with Lewis Hall injured has been great defensively as well. He's been really good at helping us sort of stack the numbers in midfield. So I agree. Second balls are going to be a big factor.
And you maybe could exploit a high line maybe as well. The looks of Isaac and Harvey Barnes, the runners you've got.
It wouldn't be the first time we've done it either. I mean, you look to, what was it? It was the first game, our first game of the season last season, wasn't it? When we won 5-1 at home.
Yeah, don't remind me about that. We don't have to talk about that.
No,
because I remember that game because I was in a pub here in Newcastle, and everyone in the pub was just remarking at how suicidally high Villa's line was.
Have we still got Champions League?
Yeah, because it worked, because most teams aren't as good on the break as we are. I think that's we have a lot of pace, and we have midfielders who can really rake long passes all over the place, especially at the moment. If you look at some of the goals we scored yesterday, particularly with Harvey Barnes in great form, Sandro Tonali and Bruno Guimaraes can just ping balls in behind like it's going out of style. And you know, when you're in transition, there's maybe no better pair of players in the league at being in transition than Alexander Isak and Harvey Barnes.
Because when we lost that 5-1 game, remember that season, Sir Alex Ferguson, he said that was Villa's best performance, even though we lost 5-1.
Yeah, but there's a reason why that became a bit of a meme, though, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what he was watching, what game he was watching.
Yeah. I think he predicted us, that was it. Then he predicted us to finish Champions League, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, you guys were excellent. I mean, excellent for ever since Emery's come in, ever since he took over from Stevie G, you know, you guys have been excellent. Because you had the squad. It was the same thing with when Eddie Howe arrived and spent and got in a couple of signings. We had the core was there of a team that really wanted to do well. Yeah, you just needed a good manager for it, and that's what Emery was. You know, you had some good recruitment because, you know, apart from the decision to hire Steven Gerrard, I mean, Villa's senior management have done a pretty good job in the last few years.
Okay.
The situation was right.
So, Steven, as a Newcastle fan, how did you feel after winning your first trophy up in 70 years?
I mean, To reference something in my personal life for the moment, I mean, I've just very recently started a new job. Going to a celebration event for the trophy, watching us win the trophy with my dad. I mean, this is not just from a football, but this might just be the best year of my life. And that, you know, there's a lot of things, a lot of people on our fan base who think the same. Because I was down in London. I wasn't at Wembley for the final, but went to Covent Garden for the fan celebrations. And I was at, there's a non-league team in London called Hanwell Town, who were founded over 100 years ago by rail workers from Newcastle. So it's a little enclave of Newcastle supporters in West London. and we were at their clubhouse because they put on events for you know, the last two finals. They've put on a screening event in their stadium. And we were down there for that, and everyone in the clubhouse watching the game. I've never seen so many grown men cry in one place, particularly when it comes to football. You know, there was one chap who, after we'd won, and there was this great outpouring of emotion in the room. I went out, so I walked to the door to go get some fresh air because it was really hot in the room.
Yeah.
And there was this guy about my I'm a big guy. I'm 6'4", so I'm really tall. I've got a bald guy, about roughly my height. His hand in his head like this, and he was just bewildered, and he was just crying.
Ooh,
and
that's how
most of us were. We were all just, it was just tears and just speechlessness because we, you know, not only did we win, it wasn't like we scraped it either. We were.
You beat Liverpool. You beat the invaders.
Yeah, you beat the best team in the country. We beat them soundly as well. One consolation goal right at the end, but we were firmly better. And then not only to do it in the final like that, but we completely waltzed all over Arsenal in the semi-finals. We beat Chelsea on the way there. We beat Forest on the way there. It, you know, we went the hardest possible route and we won it. And, you know, and all it's done is it's made us even better in the league. We've gotten even better in domestic play. So, you know, it couldn't possibly get better. I mean, we a bunch of us said after that game, we could get relegated next year and we won't care.
Yep.
Right? It would still be annoying, but we've won a trophy now. You know, we've won. It's a moment that it can never be taken away from us. And I think one of the things that people pointed out is, along with the celebrations a couple of weeks ago, which were great with the open top bus parade. Mm-hmm. Even if we next season in the Champions League, if we were to win the Champions League next season, as remarkable a feat as that would be, the outpouring of emotion for that would still be less than the League Cup this season, because it's not, there's no 70 years anymore. It's not that great tension. There's no generations of people who've been born, lived and died without seeing a trophy.
70 years is a very long time. It's not Villa. Villa will have 29 years, but you Newcastle fans, they've had to wait a lot longer, but now the wait's over.
Yeah, great. It's hard to describe just how, even now, it's still weird feeling like we won a trophy. You know, we won something this year. You know, I go to games and I think, none of this matters. We've won a trophy. It doesn't matter if we lose. We've won a trophy. And then, you know, then reality sets in and I start screaming at a referee like I was yesterday, but, you know.
Anthony's were happy as well, weren't they?
When the underdog does well.
Yeah, that's always a great... I mean, it's a story that everyone loves as well. I think that's why, like I said earlier, I want anyone but City out of the four remaining teams in the FA Cup to win it. If it's you guys, if it's Forest, if it's Palace. As long as it's not at City.
It makes a nice change.
Yeah. As long as it's not one of the established order.
I think Villa, it shows what Villa can achieve as well.
Yeah. And not just Villa. I mean, you look at Forest. Forest have been a great story this year. Palace are a good team as well. They've got a lot of likable players, and obviously they're the plucky underdogs of London as well, being where they have been historically. They've never won a trophy, unlike the three other teams in the FA Cup. So yeah, I mean, especially this season. This season's been so outside of Liverpool running away with it at the end. I mean, it's been such a level
really
season.
It's very open.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because with Newcastle, it just proves that anything's possible.
Well, that anything's possible when you have the richest ownership in the world.
Yeah, well, that helps, obviously. It's the Saudi owners.
Yeah. Or having some other immensely rich people own you like Villa do. You know, money does help. It does.
You need a good plan and structure in place with that as well.
You do. Yeah, you do.
Does it? And also, what I like about Newcastle is they're performing at a consistent level. You know what Villa are doing, that not season out, you want to get Champions League football.
Yeah.
Or at least sort of like, you know, the top six.
Yeah. I mean, if you were to tell me, I mean, especially considering it was only in, was it October 2021 is when our takeover went through. So the first three full seasons of our takeover, year one, Champions League football and a cup final that we lose to Man United. Then last season, if it wasn't for our injuries, we'd probably be back in Europe. And, you know, if it's not for City not turning up in a cup final, we would have been back in Europe because we would have got it. We would have, because we finished above Man United, we would have got Europe if not for them winning the FA Cup. Yeah. And then this season, we look pretty, I'm pretty confident we're getting Champions League football. It's not done and dusted yet, but I'm pretty confident. And we've won another, and we've won a trophy. Two finals in 3 years. Yeah. Win one trophy win and what looks to be two Champions League qualifications in the first three full seasons of the takeover.
Brilliant,
you know, great. And it's money's great, but Eddie Howe as well. Eddie Howe's
I don't think you would have won that Carabao Cup.
No, I don't think so either. I think he's the best English manager since 2008 when Redknapp and Portsmouth won the FA Cup. The last English manager to win a Carabao Cup, I think, was 2004. I think it was Steve McLaren at Middlesbrough. You know, I mean, Eddie Howe is already arguably our greatest ever manager. You know, because Kevin Keegan did great. He was, and nostalgically and emotionally, he is an immense manager for us. And he created the entertainers and a lot of the positive feelings people have for us as a club from other fan bases. Comes from Keegan's team. And then there's Sir Bobby, not just because of his time at Newcastle United, but just him as a man and the effect he had on football, you know, when it being at Barcelona, being England manager and whatnot, and being so successful himself. And then, you know, before that it was Joe Harvey who won the Fairs Cup. Was it Fairs Cup or is it, I think it was Fairs Cup, and then Stan Seymour won the FA Cup in the 50s.
But also Eddie Howe as well. He was linked to the England job as well.
Yeah, he'd be brilliant at it. I think if he,
I bet you're glad that he started at Newcastle.
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah, 100%. I think we would have probably got a really good manager in to replace him. I wouldn't have a doubt about that. But we love him so much because he's so he's a bit different. Howe is, he's really boring. In a way, because he's said before, one of his favorite pastimes is sitting down with a cup of tea and a biscuit. You know, he talks about loving like 80s music, and he's a bit sort of straight arrow. So he's a bit straight laced. He's not bad, but he's a bit of a straight laced boring guy.
Oh, maybe a bit of 80s. I love a bit of 80s.
Yeah, he's a huge Aha fan and okay. Stuff, which is fine. But I think it's mostly
the tea and get on the Madrid. That's what he needs.
Yeah, he's like a, I think he's a gin and tonic guy. I think is, oh, I think okay. is what that's I think okay. if I'm remembering correctly. But he's if you listen to him in interviews, he's really monotone. He just he doesn't use much flowery language. He doesn't. Waffle much.
He doesn't make excuses.
He fronts up and he'll say, well, we didn't play as well as we wanted to. We did this wrong, this wrong, this wrong, and we need to play better. And you know, that's where it starts and ends. You know, he takes responsibility for the team. But he's the first person to take the blame. He's the last person to take the credit. And when, especially in the working class parts of the country, you look at the Midlands, you look at the North, that these parts of the country, that kind of personality really works with people and it really resonates because he's really hardworking. He's obsessive to the nth degree, just like Emery is. And he, you know,
attention
he comes
to
across...
Detail. That's what Emery does.
Down to earth, isn't it?
Yeah, down to earth, really great attention to detail, works his arse off. Classic that coach material, first in the building, last out in the evening. You know, and we love him. He just, you know, he gets us. He knows what we want. He plays. He could have easily come in and played defensive football and whatnot, and yet he's come in. He's made us a really attacking team. I think the great parallel, I think, is Eddie Howe's time with us has sort of coincided or had some parallels with Jurgen Klopp's start at Liverpool, because they went from being a bit rubbish to really high pressing, intense style, and then slowly over time they became this ball dominant really
going to the next level.
Yeah, I think hopefully that's where we go. I would obviously would love it if, you know, if Eddie Howe wins us a Champions League and a league title, and so that would be great. Personally,
mean Henry signs us with Henry, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Well, I'm going to get on the screen some stats on Alexander Isak. Mm-hmm. So you can all see them. We'll get it on the screen. And he's the second top scorer in the Premier League. He's just behind Mo Salah. So, yeah, so Steve, I'm going to ask you, how do Aston Villa stop Isak?
I think it's difficult because, I mean, we've seen, you know, we've seen a couple of really elite centre-backs this season, and ever since he's joined us, have real trouble. You know, Spurs fans rave about Mickey van der Ven, and he terrorised him. He's made mincemeat of William Saliba and Van Dijk on multiple occasions this season. He is, in terms of an all-round package, this season, I think, the best centre-forward in the world. There are maybe better pure goal scorers. You look at Haaland, you look at Kane and Lewandowski. Oh, Salah being a right winger, I probably wouldn't include him, but he's been a better forward, sure. But no one in the world is playing as well as he is, who can also, you know, great goal scorer, is decent enough in the air, can dribble really well, can carry the ball brilliantly, is rapid, he can spray passes around, he drops off and links up really well, he does everything. The only way to stop him is to prevent him from getting the ball.
Would you need to honestly mark him, obviously?
Not necessarily, because he can really cause problems. He's really good at changing direction quickly. He's a lanky guy. He's quite tall, but he's really shifty. So he can get away from, you know, Virgil van Dijk man-marked him mostly out of the game in the cup final this season. But when it mattered, he can still peel off and just find the right little bit of space when he needs it. The only way you stop him is the way that any team has stopped him this season and last season, which is stop us as a team from getting him the ball. Because he can't cause you problems with the ball if he doesn't have it. And he caused problems for Palace in our last game by making some dummy runs. And it doesn't help that it doesn't help you guys, that Harvey Barnes is in really good form. And so is Jacob Murphy. Yeah. There are other guys who can hurt you. But most of the time, if you stop him from getting the ball, Isak can get a bit frustrated and he can drift a bit and he'll start dropping deeper to get involved in the game, and that can stunt us going forward a little bit. That's probably the only way you can stop him.
He's very clever dragging the centre backs out of position. He does that really well. So I won't give him too much spice, maybe.
Yeah. He's one of the things he's repeatedly done as well is he's shown that he can play with another striker up front. He's perfectly happy drifting out wide to the touchline, playing as a winger. He's really fast and he's really direct as well when he wants to be. So, you know, he can play anywhere on the front three. So he is really adaptable as well, which is one of his biggest strength. But I mean, you know, he'll still press as well. He works really, really hard. But at the end of the day, his job is to be a goal scorer, right? And I mean, statistically, obviously, you've got the stats on screen, 26 goal involvements in 28 Premier League games.
He's got six assists as well.
Yeah, he's really good at linking up with the likes of Murphy and Gordon and Barnes. You look at all competitions this season. I mean, he's played 32 games worth of minutes. He's got 36 starts, 37 appearances, but he's played 32 games worth of minutes. He's got 31 goals and assists in 32 games worth of minutes. So he is playing about as well as any striker in the world right now.
Another thing that Isak likes to do, he likes to run in behind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we said, going back to what we said about the high line.
Yeah.
And Isak has done that to us. He did that, actually. Was it Boxing Day game, wasn't it?
He's done it a couple times. I think the one that sticks out for me was
Boxing Day, yeah.
I think the one that sticks in my mind was when he got in behind and he ran with
yeah.
I think it was Konsa? he ran with, and he it was the 5-1, and then he sort of he cut it back and he chipped it over him into the net. That's the one that I sticks in my mind from a couple of seasons ago.
You got to sort of limit him from opportunities as well.
Yeah, you got to deny him service. That's the only way you can stop him, really, is just, you know, at the moment, he's not actually playing at his best levels. You know, what, 9 goals in our last 2 games. He only scored 1. He has this habit when he's not playing well of he'll miss the easy chances, but he'll score the hard ones. So he had a couple of chances yesterday where he had some really good opportunities, and Dean Henderson made a couple of good saves, but by and large, Isak probably could have and maybe should have had 2 or 3 in the first half alone. And then, you know, later on in the game, not long before he got subbed off, Palace gifted him one by, I think it was Maxence Lacroix, got tackled by Jolinton by faffing around at the back, and then Isak scored probably his hardest chance of the game with a really good finish. And that's just what he does. When he's not playing well, he can still score. But he you know, as long as you just have to prefer, don't. I think realistically, give him really easy chances, you'll probably not concede to at the moment.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the next talking point then. So we're going to talk about another player, one of my favourite Newcastle players at the moment, is Tonali.
Mm-hmm.
So how important is Tonali to the way Newcastle play? Why is Tonali so important?
I think that when you look at the way that we've played the last couple of seasons, the biggest weakness we had for a long time was the lack of pace at the back. So for a while we had, you know, even when he was fit and playing, Sven Botman's not the quickest, but Byrne and Cher as a centre back pairing are really slow. Lewis Hall, before he got hurt, he's not like he's running through molasses slow, but he's not quick. And Kieran Trippier's not fast. Yeah. And before that, what we had was Bruno Guimaraes, who was our deepest lying midfielder. And he's also really slow. So when you caught us in transition, when you hit us on the counter, it was really damaging. And we saw it time and time and time again. You could bait Bruno forward. You would have space in behind him. You could just play it around. City were really good at doing this.
Yeah.
You could play it around Bruno, and you have loads of space, and you're running at the slowest back line in the country. And, you know, it caused us, you know, cost us loads of goals and plenty of points lost because of that. And earlier this season, you know, we were not particularly good to start the year. And Eddie Howe started getting questioned in terms of his position as manager by some people, particularly on social media. And we were playing really ugly football at a couple of occasions. And we only really started getting a lot better once Eddie made the switch. So initially, when Tonali came in, he was meant to be the rich man's upgrade on Sean Longstaff, who was playing as an 8, who would be really industrious and would shuttle back and forth and win the ball back. But what he did was he switched it round and he put Bruno in as an 8, and he put Tonali in as the deepest lying midfielder. And ever since then, it's worked wonders. I think one of the things that's helped is during his 10-month ban, The Athletic talked about how Tonali worked with a strength and speed coach for his time out. And that's paid dividends, because when you watch him play, he's got an incredible level of stamina. He can run for 90 minutes. He's really fast for a central midfielder. He is rapid.
He's long range vision, long range passes.
Yeah.
He's got great vision. And his movements is a nightmare for defenders.
Oh, God. I think he's really explosive for a central midfielder. I think one of the things that people love to do when he joined us, I think a lot of people compared him unnecessarily, I think, to Andrea Pirlo when he was at Milan, because long hair, Italian midfielder, where it was the number 8. He compared himself more to Gennaro Gattuso in terms of being really industrious and winning the ball back, which he does really well. But he does have that touch, that sort of silk touch. He can play a really good long ball. He's got great technique, really, really perfect technique. He can rake long. The assist he got against Palace for Barnes, it was one of those sort of daisy cutter passes that sort of skimmed along the ground. And, you know, he zips passes around like it's easy, like it's nothing to him. He's utterly brilliant. And when the few times that Palace did threaten us on the break, oftentimes they would win the ball. And from where I was in one of the ends, so I was looking straight down the pitch. And what you would see is Palace win the ball.
He shoots from distance. He can really shoot from distance as well.
He can hit it hard as well.
Was that a goal he scored? Was it 2 weeks ago?
Against Brentford, yeah. And it was from a really tight angle. He said was a cross, but Thomas Frank, the Brentford manager, in the game, went up to him, and you could clearly see on the broadcast, he could clearly see that Gennaro was saying that he did mean it. So I think he was just being really humble because that's who he is. But yeah, he can hit it. I mean, when we beat Brentford in the cup, I think it was 3-1 at home months ago, back in 2024, he scored two. One of them was a really hard drilled shot from the edge of the box, and the other was this sort of flying kick that he did. He can, you know, he's really good at taking shots from distance, yeah.
Well, he's Italian international as well. He's Italian international.
He's the golden boy of the Italian team. The second he was back from his ban, he was straight back into there. You know, Stefano Pioli wanted him back right away.
Lily, I was going to ask you the next question.
Yeah.
So Aston Villa season, will it still be successful if we don't win the FA Cup?
I think so. I think we've done really well this year. It's just been unfortunate we had some injuries, didn't we, a bit earlier on this year with some of the players. But I think we've made some successful memories within the season. And as you said earlier, I think we've won every home game in the Champions League. So the fans for that, well, they'll be delighted just to have seen that. I just think we've done so well to get into the Champions League, to get into the quarterfinal, and to obviously still have a chance for the FA Cup. So, absolutely, I think we've done tremendously.
Two and a half years ago, when Emery first came in,
there was
a point of relegation. We were 17.
We were three off relegation. We were 14.
Something like that. Yeah, we're 17.
Him being where he, 2.5 years he's been with us, I think we've come a long way. I mean, there's not many clubs in the Premier League that have got a bench like ours. I think we've got such a great team. I think we've got one of the best teams, actually, in the Premier League. And I think we've got a lot more to come. As Emery said, actually, I think in one of his interviews, he just wants more and more success from Villa. He's there and he's committed to the team and the fans more so as well. So I watched a documentary with John McGinn, and he was saying that Emery, it can be quite scary at times, because when he wants something, he does. And when he's telling you, he's telling you. But they all respect him so much, which I thought was really great. Obviously, we didn't get the Champions League this year, but we've got, we might get it next year.
A few more seasons, I think Villa will be a world-class team.
Oh, God, yeah, definitely.
Give it a couple more seasons. As long as we keep Emery, we've got a chance.
What I think's nice as well is I'm on the phones a lot of work, and people that aren't Villa supporters, they're always, because they know I'm a Villa fan, they're always talking about the Villa's games, how exciting they are. So even if you're not a Villa supporter, you're talking about it, which I think is really good, to be honest with you. So I'm trying to get more Villa supporters while I'm on the phone.
Well, if you win the FA Cup, that would be everything then. I think, Emery, if you did that, that would be the start of it then. A bit like, in Man City, when they started, when they got their first trophy, but then they started winning a few trophies.
Yeah.
It's the feeling that we have at the moment. Man City won the FA Cup, wasn't it? That was their first trophy. This one being ours, and we think that this sort of validates the project that our Saudi ownership has. We want this to just be the start. This is the kicking off point.
Yeah,
definitely is. But also, if we win the FA Cup, I'm getting an Unai Emery tattoo.
Are you? Whereabouts, Chad?
I need to be sorry, still go and running out of rain, but I need to. But yeah, that's what we'll do. That's a promise on this podcast.
Oh, okay. I'm looking forward to seeing that then, because it will be happening.
Yeah. Well, to finish then, can we do a score prediction?
Oh, this is going to be a tough one.
I'll start first. Steve, I'll start with you first.
Sure. I mean, I think we just recorded an episode of our podcast just before I came on this. And I think I said that, you know, look at all the underlying numbers. We are the better team. We've scored more, conceded fewer. We score more per game. We get, you know, you guys create just a few more a little bit more in terms of chances per game. I think by and large, we're the better side. We've got more, almost double your clean sheets. I think we've generally, I think obviously it reflects itself in the table. We've just been the better team. And I think that by and large, I think Eddie Howe is pretty good at coaching against Unai Emery. Especially teams that are willing to come out against us and fight us, like you guys are, and like the big teams are. You know, it's the ones that sit deep and just 10 men in the box that cause us problems. I think what I predicted earlier on our podcast was a 3-1 win, and I'm going to stick with that.
Well, I've gone with a 2-1 Aston Villa win. I think Villa Park can be rocking again. And I think as long as we play that same intensity against PSG, then we've got sort of a chance. What do you think, Lily?
Well, you know, I'm usually good at predictions, Chad, when I have my little bet on a Saturday afternoon. but this one is a bit of a tough one. I'm going to go 3-3.
Yeah, but to be honest, a draw won't be the end of the world. A draw won't be.
I'd take that now. If you offered me that now, I'd take it.
I think it might be a draw.
Well, Lily, before we go, I know you said you wanted to give a few shout outs.
If you don't mind, I have promised. So I'd like to give a shout out to Lichfield City Spartans, who my son plays for. Hi, guys. Also, Cottage Farm Rangers, it's another great team,
yeah.
And Cottage Farm Milan. And Sutton United. I believe that Rashford was actually at Sutton United a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, well, was it?
Yeah. One of my managers at work, hi, Andy, he has a lot to do with Sutton United. And he was telling me that, yeah, Rashford was down there doing a few signatures. So, yeah. Thank you.
You're well done. And a massive shout out on behalf of the Villa Forever podcast.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, before we finish as well, I would like to make an announcement as well. On the 2nd of May, at 7:30 p.m, me and community champion Michael Huggins, we are raising money for Acorns Children's Hospice, which is a great cause, which is really close to my heart. We're having special guest interviews with a DJ and a raffle. So if you're attending the events, you can either turn up and pay £10 on the door, or you can go to my link on the Just Giving page. If you donate on that, but make sure to leave your name and details, and you'll be added to the guest list. And closer to the time, the guest will be announced. Already on my X, I've released already a promotion video. To make sure everyone goes and look at it and shares it. And make sure to turn up to the afternoon. So I can't wait for that event.
That sounds good, Chad.
Well, then, well, it's been a great podcast. Thank you everyone for watching. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe if you haven't. Make sure to smash the like button. Make sure to give it a share. And if you're listening by audio, give us a good review. Also, if you let me know your thoughts in the comment section. Well, thank you, Stephen and Lily, for your time.
No worries. Come on, Villa. Cha-cha-cha.
I'm looking forward to a win on Saturday.
Come on, Villa boys. Well, I'm going to wrap up this episode with Villa Forever. And up the Villa.
Yeah.